Hello, bra de bra ipsos natam. My name is Denny Sargent. Some people know me as Ion 131. I'm the elder guardian of the Horsemont Lodge. I'm a tantrika, I'm a witch, I'm a lot of different things. But one thing I absolutely am is a devotee of Ma'at. And I have been for probably about 40 years now. And I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the gnosis that comes from Ma'at and flows through the Horsemont Lodge. And it's for everyone. It's not for just members or non-members. But I also want to talk about Nima. I want to talk about the HML. And I want to talk about the most important thing, which is the manifestation of Ma'at on this planet. So before I begin, I would like to just take a moment to let you know that all the notes that I'm going to be using in this lecture are on my blog, and they'll also be replicated on the Horsemont Lodge, where you will also find a lot of interesting information about Ma'at, which is really important. So excuse me for throwing this up, but the Horsemont Lodge can be reached at horsemontlodge.com. For the full lecture notes of this presentation, more about myself and my books, feralmagic.com. I will show this one more time at the end of my lecture. So let us begin. Before we can talk much about Ma'at, and we can talk about Horus and Ma'at and all these archetypal figures and these powers, let's first identify them not so much as gods and goddesses, but as stages of human evolution. And through our group unconscious mind and our unconscious mind, these archetypes are seen as rising to the fore during certain periods of time. These periods of time are called aeons. And in Sanskrit, they're called kalpas. Sometimes they're called eons. In any case, these aeons have been an important part of cultures around the world. From the beginning when the world was created by the gods and so on, until this present time, a surprising variety of ancient cultures viewed time as a series of transformations that were divine and somewhat preordained. Often called aeons, or kalpas, that would be in India and Nepal. Each age was mythically assigned a particular power, ethos, metal, and sometimes a specific god or goddess, which ruled over that age. According to the Lamites, that is those who are followers of the magic as per Aleister Crowley, or who are find great worth or importance in the Book of the Law, we are in the age of Horus now, a time of force and fire, which fits quite well with how things are according to the chaos around us, of course, and the destruction of hierarchies and old stale structures that were very important for a long time and no longer are, including things like maybe capitalism. According to the ancient Greeks, we are in the age of lead now, ruled by Saturn, or Kronos, according to the Hindus and Tantrikas, we are in the age of Kali now, an iron age when all is chaos, but all wisdom is being revealed to those with the wit to see. These are archetypal, mythic, and magical schemas, but to understand how we view and work with Ma'at, it is important to know the schema within which we operate in the Horsemont Lodge, and to understand the transcendent concept of Ma'at, not just in a narrow mythological or occult setting, but in a transformational setting in terms of what is happening now. We are going through a major change in the way we perceive everything, and Ma'at is crucial to this. The aeonic schema is not to be taken literally or real. As we know, the idea of ages in the Western occult system has to do with the progression of aeons through the equinoxes. Most of you probably know we are now in quote unquote the age of Aquarius. Each age or aeon is supposed to be 2000 years. There's this whole, of course, sort of almost mechanistic schema for aeons. But we don't want to take this schema literally, like every 2,000 years these things are going to happen. You're going to hear my dog coming and going. That's just life. So they are not literally real, but can, should be seen as states of human evolution that are typified by certain manifestations. They are not boxes or limits or labels. Rather, I would like you to see them as liminal concepts that prepare us for evolutionary change and awakening to new paradigms. So let's talk now about what's the progression of the aeons. This is what's most important. And you can listen to the barking wolf behind me. This whole paradigm moves through time from the beginning of the Earth as a lifeless glowing ball to the present. But time, like anything else, is a conceptual framework. And according to physics and to physicists, it is moving in at least two directions at the same time. Tachyons, we know, move both backwards and forwards in time simultaneously. If, as quantum theory portends, all time is occurring simultaneously, then any perception we have of time, evolution, and spiritual progression is simply another paradigm within which to work. But this concept progressive aeons is but a liminal mythic history paradigm of time and is reflected in similar frameworks in other cultures, as is the idea of ages or aeons that we've been talking about, that have particular meanings and qualities. In this archetypal view, this mythic progression of aeons is more about changing cultures and experiences and mental and psychological increased complexity of humanity than anything else. In other words, we want to think of these shifts in aeons really as reflecting human evolution, both mentally, physically, spiritually, etc. These ages are seen as archetypal forces within us. Now, as masks we might wear and as states of consciousness. All the same time, the aeon or archetype that we are focusing on now is the final age, quote unquote, final age, after which this one, the aeon of Ma'at, to be precise. And this is supposedly the end of the road, but of course it isn't, because there is no end, there is only a spiral. So the aeon of Ma'at is really seen by us and by a lot of people as the return to a kind of golden age, but in a much higher level of consciousness, meaning a unity of human consciousness, a leap in evolution that will help us succeed and continue as a species, as opposed to making ourselves extinct, which is a very real possibility. So as I start to talk about the different aeons, I'm going to walk through the different quote-unquote magical aeons and talk about what each portends. I want you to keep in mind, this is a conceptual framework that is not about, you know, oh, during this time, everybody did this. During this time, everybody did this. That is an old school occult view of things, that during a goddess aeon, everything was matriarchy and then everything was patriarchy. Things just simply historically didn't work that way. It's more a paradigm shift. And if you can kind of pull back and think of it that way, it'll make more sense. The reason I'm talking about the progression of aeons now, instead of just talking to you about Ma'at, is that when Nima, who wrote, and let me throw this up right now. One of the more important books about Ma'at, if not the most important book about Ma'at, Ma'at Magic, A Guide to Self-Initiation, which I highly, highly recommend to everybody who's watching this. When she wrote this book, in the preceding era before she wrote this book, she received direct communication from the Aeon of Ma'at, from, in fact, the goddess herself, after several other ritual situations happened. So when this information came through her as a transmission, and this transmission, Liber Pene Praenumbra, which I'm going to read some quotes from at the end, became the cornerstone of a lot of the magical work that I am doing and that a lot of people are doing and that the Horus Ma'at Lodge is founded upon. So she channeled essentially a transmission from Ma'at, and in that is encoded the idea of these aeons, and it expresses more significantly what Ma'at truly is in terms of human evolution. So I've chosen to talk about the aeons so you understand how this all comes together in the idea of Ma'at and in the idea of a future where we have achieved liberation in the sense that we have all joined human consciousness into one human consciousness, which other visionaries have had this this exact vision of humanity becoming wholly conscious in and of itself as one entity. In the Horus Ma'at Lodge and in Ma'at magic, this entity is called Natan. Teilhard de Chardin, who was a Christian philosopher who had a very, very similar vision of the end point of human evolution, us coming together and forming one unified consciousness. He calls it the Omega point. So let me talk a little bit more. I like my graphic, so I'm going to show you another graphic that maybe will help you sort of wrap your head around what I'm talking about here. This is a little bit cheesy, but this is a graphic to help you see and understand the different aeons. So let's start by saying the whole paradigm moves through time from the beginning of the earth as a lifeless void ball to the present. Okay, and let's move forward. Let's talk about the different ones and ignore my barking wolf dog. Sorry, it's just the way it's gonna be. So the first one is the nameless aeon. The nameless aeon or wordless aeon, I've typified it as primate, feral, timeless time. This encompasses the entire time that humanity was primates, but we were not able to speak. We did not have full linguistic ability. There's possibilities. There's a wonderful field of study that I'm involved with called evolutionary linguistics. And we know that at a certain point, we tipped from being primates. We simply lived more in the animal realm. And then we were able to cognate. And at that moment, we were able, at that point in time, or during that aeon of time, we were able to evolve sign language, then language. There's a lot of information out there about this sort of transition. In order to communicate important things about hunting, about different things, we started to conceptualize time that wasn't real, i.e. future, and then codify and remember past time and apply it to the present. This is a lot of stuff, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but it was a major shift. The nameless aeon, we were one with the animals, we were one with the ecosystem. We were part of the ecosystem, and we survived as part of the ecosystem. Once we had the word, as some people say, you know, once we were able to cognate and use higher cortex work and be able to function and communicate things that had not happened yet, or things that had happened but were gone, we moved into a different state of consciousness. And that state of consciousness is really crucial because it separates us from nature. And so a quick wrap up of the nameless aeon. The time period is from the creation of the earth until mankind begins to use language as a fully formed mode of sophisticated communication. The archetypal force was the power of all spirit. I use the god Pan as the image, who was half man and half animal, and simply was an extension of greater nature. And horned gods, in general, horned mass, and other primal animal wilderness forces, undifferentiated by sexual force, like just wild beings, feral beings. Some of the earliest cave paintings that you see, I think, epitomize that. it's identified sometimes as in magic as the Ana Pen or chaos. Nema ascribed the god Bez to this Aeon. And in classical Western magical tradition, especially within Thelema and within, say, the Golden Dawn and other Hermetic traditions, the Aeons are typified by Egyptian gods, which is fine. But one could easily ascribe other gods, such as Greek gods like Pan. The next Aeon that occurs is the Aeon of the Mother. Now, again, how many thousands of years have gone by, it's not so important. Really, I want you to be thinking in terms of the major mental, physical, physiological, psychological shifts and evolutionary leaps that are happening in each of these things. That is far more important than anything else, I believe. So, the Aeon of the Mother, the time period from the formation of prehistoric hunter-gatherer cultures into the development of agriculture, and dominated somewhat by matriarchal organization of tribal units and clans. The reason why is because at this time, from what we can understand, anthropology is always evolving, ancient history is always evolving. It seems perfectly logical that humanity at that point did not understand how the sexual reproduction system worked. It wasn't, even the Victorians didn't think that, you know, they didn't really understand how the system worked scientifically. It seemed miraculous that women would produce offspring and female animals would produce offspring. The idea of a sperm and an egg simply were beyond conception at that point. It was all seen as divine and spiritual. So this is some of the thoughts that people have in terms of why the goddess was one of the earliest deity forms that you find, the Venus of Willendorf, etc. So we know that matriarchy was very big. Was it universal? Probably not. But the ethos and the paradigm of this time is very much female oriented. It is also the time when hunter-gatherers started to stay in places and to grow food and do agriculture. The archetypal force, the Great Mother, all goddesses of nature identified in traditional magic as Nuit or Isis. So the next Aeon to talk about is the Aeon of the Father. So we've gone from the nameless Aeon, which is purely linked with nature, and coming out of it, we suddenly have become a different, differentiated, evolving species that is very, very different from the other animals. And that's the Aeon of the Mother, the Aeon of agriculture, the Aeon of tribal groupings. We then moved into the Aeon of the Father. And from the beginning of prehistoric, from the beginning of this time, prehistoric city centers really started to manifest. Buildings and permanent buildings, now that agricultures are starting to be created. And pretty soon villages and then cities and organization becomes far more important than it had been. Organization leads to hierarchy, etc. This is also the beginning of written history, where oral traditions, which were very important in the previous Aeon, the Aeon of the Mother, and so much of tribal culture has been lost because oral traditions and oral transmissions have been interrupted. Now we have writing, first primitive writing, primitive symbology, and then hieroglyphics, and then it moves into what the alphabet later in the later eras of prehistory, as we're moving into history being when we're actually being able to write things down. We have an alphabetic system that probably came out of Phoenician, and this made life even faster and easier. So we went from things like knotted cords that the Incas used like that to actually writing down glyphs that looked like what they were. A bird was a symbol of a bird. If you look at ancient Chinese characters, you can see those, and then they evolved slowly into glyph forms that became both an image as well as a sound. For example, a bull head in very, very ancient symbolism in Canaan had a meaning of a bull that later became very stylized into the sound ah. And then it evolved into what we know as Hebrew now as Aleph, or the ah, again, the ah sound. So this is a little pedantic, but I'm hoping you find it interesting. And if not, just sort of let it flow by. So the an of the father is really really started manifesting with the beginning of written history, hierarchical organization, the formulation of religions, political structures, and a real shift to a patriarchal paradigm, and the manifestation of science, industry, monotheism, etc. So this was also the rise of things like weapons, war, tribal fighting, beginnings of, you know, proto-imperialism. So in this era, the role of the feminine is not quite as important as the role of the more aggressive masculine deities. And this is also the beginning of the time of religion, organized religion. Whereas before it was animistic or very, very loosely pagan, it seems. At this point now, all of a sudden, we have a priest class coming out of ancient Sumeria and Mesopotamia and other places, and a hierarchy and a king as opposed to a group of people. We have a lot of information about this, but of course, not as much as we would like. And then later on, this sort of hierarchy, and it's easy now for us to diss the patriarchal era, but it brought us things like organization, it brought us things like science, it brought us things like being able to advance our tool making abilities and our use of our environment, irrigation. There were many positive things that came out of each of these aeons and negative things that came out of each of these aeons. The industry, we can argue industry was something that helped us feed more people, but we can also see it as, you know, destroying our planet right now. So each of these ages had a purpose. Each of these evolutionary shifts had a reason or a purpose in terms of the overall spiritual, mental, and physical evolution of humanity. But each ended up, especially towards the end of each of these periods of time, ended up being somewhat toxic and problematic, and then having to, this is just the way the flow of evolution has gone. The archetypal force for the Aeon of the Father was the great godfather of the heavenly male, all sorts of gods from Zeus to Jehovah to Allah. Eventually it evolved, of course, more into a monotheistic tradition where there was only one God and he was male. So in each of these periods of time, you see, typified the archetype that was rising to the fore to bring us to a point of evolutionary shift that we needed. That's one way to look at it anyway. In magic, in the Western occult tradition, the deity form is, in the Book of the Law, is Hadid, but traditionally in terms of Egyptian gods, it is Osiris or Asar. So the next aeon is the aeon of the sun, which is where we are now. According to the Book of the Law, according to a lot of Western magical traditions, this is ruled by the god Horus, the god of force and fire and war and lots of craziness. But the child, see, this is a very important thing. The child aeon is crucial. Think of the hippies. Think of the aeon of Aquarius, the age of Aquarius. Think of old structures being broken down. Each one of these ages transitions with the paradigm that existed as sort of our reality was shattered and something new arose. And it is now happening right now with the aim of the father and patriarchy and all these old, now very, very negative things are breaking down. Everything's breaking down. Even the concept of gender is breaking down now. Gender fluid is kind of becoming a norm. And this sort of hierarchical, everything has its place and stratified, and there's a caste system, which was the aim of the father brought in a way to help us move forward evolutionarily, is no longer necessary. The scaffolding is not necessary anymore. And the aim of Horus, the god of force and fire, is coming through, and just everything is sort of shattering and breaking. And this new age is bringing us technology. It's bringing us computers. It's bringing us AI. It's bringing us a whole different paradigm that we can barely keep up with, of course, because it's flowing over us. So it does seem shocking and a bit scary and a bit violent, very violent at times. So roughly now, the breaking away from old hierarchies, new thinking and advanced technology blooming, the breaking down of rigid ideologies, political structures, patriarchal constructs and belief systems are all being swept away in sort of a force and fire is what they're calling it, but it's not passive and it's not quiet. It's pretty wild, right? It's also, we finally have the science from the end of the father to understand that we're destroying our planet. The global warming is a very real thing. If you think about the concept that it's called global warming, right? And he is a god of force and fire. There's some interesting thoughtful connections maybe there. So this is new, wild, renewing, wild child energy that is amazing. And if you think of force and fire extending to the idea of the internet, the idea of new forms of radiation and the new ways of looking at science and this whole explosion of quantum physics, that all of a sudden we're looking at dark matter and we're looking at string theory, and this is all part of what's happening now. Our paradigm is shifting so radically and so intensely that it's hard to keep up. And the big worry, of course, is that we're going to survive as a species. This leads us to the next aeon. Now, we are right in the middle of this chaos now. Nima, when Ma'at came through her and she saw and she understood, and Ma'at made clear through the words that were transmitted to her in Liber Pene Praenumbra, which is on the Horus Ma'at Lodge website, and you can also find it quite easily online if you just type in Nima Ma'at Liber, Liber Pene, Pennae Praenumbra, Praenumbra. Anyway, I have it listed in a minute. You'll see it. And it's best just to buy the book Ma'at Magic, frankly, which has so many other things in it. Anyway, Ma'at said to her, and Ma'at has come through, not just her, but lots and lots of people, including me. Ma'at is starting to show up saying, look, time is no longer an issue. You don't have to worry about this aeon or this aeon, because as you now know, time, all time is now. Time is flowing backwards and forwards. And Ma'at reached from Ma'at's power, Ma'at's manifestation is coming to us from the quote unquote future to the present to help us get across this mess, this chaos, this force and fire, to make it through, so that we get to the point where Ma'at manifests, which is where we attain species full consciousness and full unity. And at that point, we will make a major evolutionary leap to something other than what we are now, which is a bunch of monkeys who are still beating the crap out of each other. Nima calls this new leap, humanity, Homo Veritas, which I think is pretty cool. Anyway, Let me talk to you about this future Aeon of the Daughter, which is now coming into our reality to help us manifest itself. The Aeon of the Daughter, the time period, the future, a transcendent age of rebalancing, renewing, and rebirthing new concepts, ideas, cultural norms, organizational paradigms, and lifestyles. Evolutionary leap time. We see some hints of the possibilities of this future in the shifts in consciousness that are even now beginning. The archetypal force, the other child. So, Aeon of the Father, Aeon of the Son, and here it is, the other child. As Horus was the child of the mother and the father, so too is Ma'at. She is the other child, the most important child and the final child in this mythic paradigm. All future leaning archetypes are of a balancing nature and manifest Ma'at. A new human form of nominally female Jinander archetypal force, new and evolutionary, identified in magic as Ma'at. Every magical system is a container for the possibilities of causing change with will or love. All magic is liminal, and with what we now know, free of the old Aeon mental restrictions of hierarchical and linear progression, we now know that nothing is linear. Time is flexible and illusionary, and we are far freer and have far more options than we ever thought possible. It is physics that has opened the door and proven to be wilder and more fantastic than any magic. So the Aeon of Ma'at offers us the gateway to take all of these things that are exploding and fold them into a completely new consciousness, a new way of doing things. So this is a quick paradigm shift for you to see this Aeonic progression. I want to talk now about just generally what this is about. Why am I bringing this up? Why is Ma'at so important? Our work in the Horus Ma'at Lodge has been focused on using magic to help humanity survive the volatile, fiery, current Aeon, of course, and make the evolutionary leap to a new state of being that manifests balance, truth, and justice. We believe that manifesting Ma'at in this way, bringing the future to the present, is the only way humanity will survive. We must evolve as quickly and as thoroughly as we possibly can. And we need help. And Ma'at, the energies of the future, where there is a possibility future where we succeed, is helping us do that. So if we take all these Aeons and we say, all right, these are these archetypal forces, these are these evolutionary stages, what we really find when we look at that is that if all time is happening simultaneously, we have access to what Nima called pan-aeonic magic, meaning we can work with any of those forces and all of those forces, all of those God forms, all of those energies in a positive and integrative way to achieve our goal, whether you want to call it Nirvana or you want to call it Shambhala or you want to call it, you know, the omega point. We like to think of it as a point of consciousness where human beings are so united in consciousness and in experience that a human being hurting another human being becomes instantly anathema, because we are then aware that to hurt another being is hurting yourself. To poison something is to poison everybody. To throw garbage into the ocean is to harm all of us. Right now we are fragmented and separate, and we are in our own little ego shells. Ma'at is bringing to us a great gnosis, which is at some point we will evolve to a point where we have unified consciousness and we are all aware of each other and aware of this. This is the major point why the Horus Ma'at Lodge was created. This is the major reason the Horus Ma'at Lodge was created, was to help us attain this Ma'at, to attain truth, justice, and understanding each other on a deep, deep level. So this is our work at the Horus Ma'at Lodge, is to make Nima's vision. And all of us have partaken of that vision. All of us do work every month where we commune with Ma'at, and we all see what the vision is at this point. And the idea is to make sure that happens. Now, why? Because there are many possibility futures. Nima herself pointed out that at some point we can destroy ourselves. She has had visions, and I have had visions, where the earth is a burned out husk, or the earth is toxic, or many, many possibility futures where humanity simply fails and the rest of the animals and nature takes over and Gaia does just fine. But if we believe in our own species, if we're trying hard to save ourselves and move ourselves forward in evolution, if you think humanity sucks and it should go, well then, okay, that's totally understandable. But we believe in the great work. The great work is the advancing of human evolution to an end result where we all live in peace and happiness, justice, balance, all sorts of things that are real. So this work explained in depth Ma'at magic. And so I want to end by simply showing you a couple of things. I want to talk to you a little bit about Nima's quotes. She talks about in her quotes in Liber Pini Penumbra. Ma'at comes through and says, I know you're confused. These are my words. I know you're confused. You think, oh, we're in the age of Horus now. And yes, Horus is a real thing, and Horus is come and is doing the work that Horus needs to do. But I am Ma'at. I transcend all of these things. I transcend Horus. I am behind Horus. I am the feathers and the wind that lifts him. Yes, fire is dripping from his wings. Yes, many things are going to be changed and destroyed. But in the end, Ma'at will prevail. And I am coming to you now to reach down or reach out or reach from your quote-unquote future, which is always existing now, to show you that there is a path. There is one path that will get you to your goal of evolutionary consciousness unity by reaching back to you, throwing you a lifeline, as it were. I am showing you a way to do this. And that's the importance of Ma'at. Ma'at is here now, and her presence is spreading to show us the way to achieve Ma'at. So by invoking her, by calling upon her, this is the work we do. That is all I have to say right now. I'm super happy to have been here. Thank you so much. Again, there's many more notes that I haven't gotten to. I don't have time. They are here at feralmagic.com. And so much more is available at the Horus Ma'at Lodge if you're interested in this work of Ma'at. The will to love is a law to live. Abrahadabra ipsos, natan. May we all achieve Ma'at. Joy to you and blessings.